Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to lighten our load. Oh, boy. As seems these days, life in the world and on this earth has been a real challenge for many. Others are saying, I want an escape plan. Others are saying, where is my spaceship? I've got to go to another planet. Even myself, I did a little channeling the other day and a little hypnosis, and it said, oh, I can't wait to get to Saturn. I've already been Neptune and Jupiter and Earth. I'm ready to go to Saturn. Time to shift our energies, lighten up a little, and say, you know what? Let's just take care of the moment and enjoy a little lightness. What we're talking about today is children's books. You know, I look at children, and I have two grandchildren, and I really say, what are they going to be? What are they going to teach us? What are they going to show us? Because if we look back at the generations, we've always had children, and we've also said to them, this is what you're going to be. This is how you're going to act. This is how you're going to stand between the lines, because this is what's expected. Now, in the year 2018, we go, holy smokes, look at it. We have kids, and now they are guiding us. What a wonderful journey. My guest is Ariane de Boivazan. She has three children's books, which are absolutely spectacular. And the reason I'm saying they're spectacular is because they've really taken a leap. No longer are they stories of Cinderella and, you know, your prince is going to come down the street and you rescue from the world of turmoil and all of these darkness of the earth. It's really about lightness, kindness, joy, sadness, fun, giggles, everything, and about being you. And it isn't that exciting. I think we really need a new age type children's books, and these are definitely the type of book to look at. Ariane, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. Real pleasure to speak with you, too.
Ariane, I think your books, you know, are absolutely spectacular. The books we're talking about today are You Are Loved, Spiritual Life Lessons for Kids, Giggles and Joy, and Being You. They're all spiritual life lessons, but I almost call it, it's a really a revolution of a new age children's book, yes?
Oh, thank you for saying that. You know, I'm such a believer that our tiny humans also need to be met where they are. And, you know, they in some ways are so representative of what we as parents and caregivers and teachers and grandparents are trying to remind ourselves, right? And So I just find kids, you know, they are in a place of giggles and joy, and they do know what true love is, which isn't based on performance or achievement or competition, and all they want to be is sort of the full expression of themselves. So, you know, my hope with the books was to have it be a tool for people who do have the privilege of taking care of our tiny little ones, but also have it be sort of, you know, this lovely sweet space for a child to land with an adult and to sort of do a deep dive in some ways into the subjects of gratitude or, you know, what does it mean to be home or courage or, you know, talk to them about their body and the power of their breath and do it in a real simple way. You know, each one of these, each book is eight of these life skills. Usually the child chooses it themselves, which is a sweet thing to see where they're at.
Well, you know what I really find about your book is that we're looking at these children, and parents are going, oh, this is great. You know, I'm kind of understanding them, because a lot of parents these days are in their 20s and early 30s, and they're really into this consciousness, awakening, meditation, yoga, eating well. The planet is a great place to be. However, there are a lot of grandparents who are still into the paradigm of what they grew up in, and that was the white picket fence, how many letters behind your name, and make sure you leave a legacy. So I think really what we're looking at is very distinct generational changes, all living in the same, sometimes home or same area, and they're all interacting with each other. So each one is learning from another if they're open to it. And really, we're looking, we used to always look at the elders and say, let's learn about their wisdom. Really, now we're looking at the children to learn about their love. Yes?
Beautifully said. Absolutely. I mean, I have a nearly five-year-old. He turns five tomorrow. And, you know, I always thank him every night when we say prayers. Thank you for teaching me. And, you know, there's more of sort of an equality of what he's learning. You know, sometimes I say, you're a great kid, you're learning, and you're still making mistakes. And I say, I'm a great mom, I'm learning, and I'm still making mistakes.
Right.
And there's sort of like a togetherness, as opposed to a superior inferior, or a, you know, I call it more an unparenting. Because I know for me, you know, my parents did the best they could, but they were very traditional. You know, I was sent to face a corner when I was, you know, not behaving well, and my mother certainly thinks I should be doing that with my son. And I find like the labels around parenting, the expectations are so high on parents of any age, that I'm very big on just dropping all the expectations and just kind of meeting your child where they are, but letting your child meet you. Like, I'm, you know, if I'm stressed or upset, or I've had an argument, or I've had an email that's annoyed me, you know, a lot of people try to kind of go, okay, I've got to put that away, and then I've got to go meet my child. And the child is so intuitive and so sensitive. They know that you're off. They don't know why you're off, but they know that mom is stressed, or mom's upset, or mom's impatient, or mom's got a strange face on. And of course, the child automatically goes, uh-oh, maybe it's about me. And so I'm very big at sort of going, you know what, I've received an email that's upset me, or I've got a meeting, I don't feel prepared, or I'm nervous about something. So there's an inclusion where this child knows that I have emotions, I have a bad day, I have stuff going on, and it allows them to have a bad day, have stuff going on. So they don't have to always be good or happy or fit in. You know, we don't give our kids permission to have a bad day. We don't allow them to be grumpy. We say, stop being grumpy. And yet adults are allowed to have a bad day and be grumpy, you know.
Well, really, I think at the age of spewing, the age of abusing, the age of putting upon, the age of
shaming,
superiority or shame or guilt or all that other stuff is really coming to an end. And really, it's all about responsibility for each other. And, you know, while these books are wonderful to read to your children, I would think that if you're a grandparent, and these days, what is a grandparent? What is that, 40 years old and older, you know, or great-grandparents? Yeah. They sit down and they read these books, and they're going, you know, I really don't understand this. This seems very off to me. However, there are many grandparents who are saying, you know what, I've always wanted to think that way. You know, we're looking at grandparents these days, and we're saying, well, now it's time to come back to your inner child. I've had guests on here as how to be a great elder and enjoy your retirement. And they say, well, let's go back to your inner child. And I'm going, when did you ever lose it? I don't understand that, you know. They're like, well, now it's time to play. Well, now it's time to enjoy things, now that you've, quote, done what you needed to do in your life. And I'm going, why is there such a dichotomy there? What is the point of life in the first place, yes?
You know, to that, what comes to my mind and heart is, I feel like, you know, most of the parents I've ever spoken to, and grandparents, all they want for their kids and their grandparents is to be happy. right? That's what I've heard universally. I've, you know, done some research all around the world. And when you really probe people, a lot of people, they're not really focused on the happy factor. Not even
they don't
themselves.
Even know what the word means.
Right, not even for themselves or for their children.
Right.
They're focused on their kids' academics, on fitting in,
right.
on doing a sport, on learning a language maybe, on playing an instrument, but on really getting them to college and getting them to fit in with what I call the consensus consciousness. And
right.
why? Because that is what they've known. That's what they were told to do. And yet,
correct.
You know, all the research shows that, you know, not only are our kids and teenagers not happy, but our the parents of these teenagers aren't happy
yes.
either. And, you know, the most when I'm asked, you know, what is the most important thing to have your child be happy, which is really what we need to be talking about, I say the most important thing is for each adult, whether they have one at home or two at home or however many and whatever, for each adult to be happy. And so the work really is on mom, how happy are you? Not together with dad or together with another woman, whatever, but really happy are you? Because when the happiness is there, the child is naturally sort of in that state. There's nothing to be or do. And the same thing for grandparents. Like, what do you need to do to sort of emanate that? And that's a journey that, you know, in some ways is much harder than the parenting journey, because being happy, which is, do you need to leave a relationship? Do you need to leave a job? Do you need to look at some habits? Do you need to go inwards, you know, for your fulfillment as opposed to outwards in the world, right? The happiness of kids is very dependent on the happiness of, like, who's around them.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
To the idea that happiness is coming from the outside, but also, too, that life should always be cotton candy and lollipops and, oh, my gosh, my mom had a frown on her face today, you know? I think happiness really is understanding that the life around you has flow, so I may be unhappy in this moment, and I will be able to phase through that, and then I will be happy again. So, in other words, happiness is not a state that you need to acquire and put up your walls when you get there. Really, it's just a phase that you go through as everything evolves, yes?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. You know, I really wanted to be quite bold with the books. And, you know, there's a poem called Bye Bye Bad Day. There's a poem called Sad and Mad. There's a
right.
poem called Grown Ups. Right, which is grown-ups can be sad, grown-ups can be mad, and they are trying to understand the unpredictability of grown-ups. You know, sad and mad is about how all these emotions are here and they are welcome, because I find that they're welcome when you're a newborn baby, and then the sad and mad emotions kind of get squeezed out of you, right? And so your emotional range or the emotional fitness of a child gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and then whatever is repressed or not allowed or not expressed or not welcome, that shows up through behavior. Like I always say, you know, all emotions are welcome here. You're safe completely. Some of the behaviors are not going to be welcome and appropriate. But I feel like the need to sort of, there's a poem on change. You know, it's probably the longest one in the book. I think it's 6 pages because a child goes through change. But one of the things that we as adults don't particularly like change, because change brings up the unknown. I don't know what's
right.
going to happen after this change, right? And yet all of parenting is about the unknown. You have no idea which child is going to come out of bed or come back from school or want to eat their supper or not. And so, you know, I'm right there with you in terms of not, this isn't, you know, a cotton candy sort of trilogy of books. It very much is a way to allow children to have their life experiences. And when I have a bad day, I tell my son, I've had a bad day. And then it invites quite a sweet, deep, intimate conversation about what's a bad day for him, right? I asked him last night, I said, you know, what makes you stressed? Because we were talking about what stress is. And it was fascinating, you know, what I heard from him, which each one of these life skills in some ways, you know, we're always trying to understand our children better more than, you know, what happened at school today. And I feel these are just there's a point of connection that's possible here.
And it also, too, I think, invites the parents when they're reading these books to their children is to maybe reset, to maybe refocus, to reflect upon their day. Generally, when you're reading books, it's at the end of the day in the evening. And you say, you know what? Maybe I couldn't shift something, or maybe I can see how I'm speaking to my child, or maybe I can see how I'm speaking to myself, which is even a greater good. I think children's books are always a way for parents to say, wow, you know, maybe this is for me today, maybe not just for my child.
I read somewhere a couple of years ago that the way we speak to our children and the way we speak to our spouse, if we have one, becomes their inner voice. And I tell you, I read that and I was just like, wow, I really need to be very mindful of sort of the words that are being used and especially the tone and the face. But I know when I sit down and read a book, you know, before we even choose the book, read the book, everyone takes at least one, if not two, deep breaths. We come into the present moment, we move some of the energy through. You know, we're very big on letting go, you know, as a conscious family, which is, it's just not something that's talked about. We talk about what do we need to let go today, right? Of course, we talk about what's great and what was beautiful and what we want to celebrate, but it's like, do we need to let go of pain, of anger, of an argument, of frustration, of sadness, of mean words that were said? And there's no going to sleep with any of that. You know, that becomes a habit. It's a real letting go of, you know, I put my hand on his chest, I take it out of him and I go, we're going to send this back to the light. We're going to send this back to the light. And he does it himself. And it's just like, okay, so I get to be light, right? I get to be free of this. And we're so bad at doing that as adults. Like, I wouldn't say I'm good at doing that myself. Right. You know, I tend to wake up with whatever happened the day before in personally, professionally, financially. But I'd like to, you know, and the more I do it with him, we had an argument the other day, you know, and I was not done with it. And he came towards me and he goes, Mom, can we let it go now? And I was like, oh, my God, of course we can let it go. But, you know, like it's amazing when they have really taken something on and they are there to remind you that it's really time to let it go or it's not that serious. Right. Which is another thing that children are hearing. Mom, is it really that serious?
It's almost like they are intuitive wisdom, wisdom on your shoulder type people. Because what happens is, you know, we look at adults and we say, well, I'm going to go to meditation class or I'm going to go to yoga class. You see people coming out of those classes and they're stuffing down fast food, you know, and they're yelling and screaming on their cell phone because they're late for something they have to get to next, you know. And you think about it, are we thinking we're doing good and being good and just holding that up as, you know, a label on our forehead, yet with all of our sadness, trials, and tribulations, are they all stuck on our butt? You know what I mean? More or less an idea. You know, and it's almost like it's all part of the same thing. So can we take the children and say, can we use them as reflectors? But we really have to be super careful because while we can use them as reflectors, we can't really engage them or have them in our space. And I think that's really important for children also to understand about being in someone else's space versus being in their space and being responsible for their space.
You know, when before I had a child, I was going to the retreats and going to workshops and new teachers and doing channelings and doing every meditation, yoga, everything because I was single. And I remember I didn't have a fear about it, but I very much thought, wow, this going to retreats thing is going to end because, you know, I'm going to be taking care of a small human. And yet I tell all new expectant parents, you know, if you want to, you will be in a daily retreat with your child.
Right, right.
If you want to. And I feel like for me, you know, whenever something is here for me to be looked at, whether it's with my spouse or with my child, or even with my own parents, you know, who are grandparents to my child, the number one question I always go to before I even respond to any of those people I've just named is, what's here for me, or what's going on with me? And, I, you know, it could be, wow, this reminds me of something in my childhood, or wow, I haven't taken care of myself, or wow, you know, I don't feel seen and recognized me as a woman. You know, but it's, if I can clear some of that up, my child is not the recipient of what's going on with me. He's the recipient of a clear, you know, loving intent, which could involve boundaries or discipline or, you know, any one of those things. I'm not shying away from those. But I know that when I lose it, quote unquote, with my child, it's because he is getting what's going on with me as opposed to just what's getting on with him.
Right. But I think also, too, the idea that can we allow the concept of feelings to come up? Because feelings is really what makes the world go around, not reaction and action. And if we look at that, even let's say if we had a bad day as a parent, we could sit down and, you know, we could just, maybe you might just be sitting there crying, or maybe you just may be sitting there and just not feeling well or whatever it might be, and just allow that feeling to come through you as a parent versus saying, oh, I need to go take care of my child now and they shouldn't be involved in this. You know, in other words, as we get older, do we stockpile all the crap that goes on, or do we allow it to flow through us? Mm-hmm. And then when it flows through us, and it, let's say a tear is shed another day, a child could say, are you feeling sad? And they're not saying, oh, are you feeling sad because you broke your toe the other day? They're saying, are you feeling sad for today? In other words, you're allowing your fears to come out, but they're also saying that it could be something different today. In other words, move through. Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I did a TED Talk in New York a couple of months ago, and it was about three life skills that we are not really focused on in teaching our kids. And one of them was exactly what you're talking about, which is this, you know, this emotional range and emotional permission and emotional welcomeness of everyone's emotions, not just the child's, but also, you know, the adults or the teachers, but to really... To use your words in a way that they understand that. Like, I know for me, when he sees me cry, which he does, you know, on a, I'd say a regular basis for, you know, good and bad reasons, he's learned also that sometimes I cry when I'm really happy about something, or sometimes I cry when I'm missing someone. Or so there's legs below this word of sadness, right, which are much more numerous than any of the ones I've ever. I don't remember seeing my parents cry. I remember do other things but not cry. But just to have them realize that their emotions are also part of their tool belt. And when they're feeling something, you know, it comes back to one of the things you said earlier about intuitive beings. Most parents I've spoken to or taught or met or coached have never mentioned the word intuition to their children, right? And they have learned the hard way that they, you know, got married to the wrong guy or bought the wrong home or took the wrong job or whatever it is, because they didn't really trust their intuition. And I know for me, my journey was certainly one of not, you know, being living above the neck, which is like I was so told that, you know, my mind was great and brilliant and I got accolades and good degrees and that's what was welcomed and celebrated at home, that I was very out of my body. You know, I didn't live in it. I didn't exist in it. I certainly didn't exist in it as a girl. I had two brothers each side of me. So, you know, the being part of the body, and that the body has wisdom and the body has answers and the body knows if it's a yes or a no, right? Explaining what intuition is. But even at four, like, I often say, I go, what does your intuition tell you? And they are absolutely able to access that. And I think the sooner they do it, the sooner you're teaching them that they are self-reliant. They are not only reliant on parents and grown-ups and teachers in this external world, but they too have a sense whether those connections come from something higher than them, whether it comes from just their knowing. So I'm very big on intuition also as being one that is shared, because, you know, too many of us adults, you know, my background is also teaching adults sort of basic life skills, but everyone has stories of, you know, I knew with a capital K that this was right or this was wrong. And so let's
let's help that. You know, I think it was Forbes that did an article recently where it said, is intuition the highest form of intelligence? Mm. Well, if it is, or even if it's a possibility that it is, I don't need all the science to back it up. But if it is, well, you know, we're so obsessed with raising brilliant, bright, intelligent kids, let's tack intuition on there as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that because I really don't ever think of life ever has mistakes. I don't even know what that word doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't go somewhere. Or even, you know, when people say, did I take the wrong road or whatever. And I like to liken it to when people say, what is your intuition? And my intuition, I would say, okay, let's say if there's an event or, okay, I'm going to marry this person. My intuition says, oh, it's probably not the good thing to do. Right? And I go ahead and do it anyway. Well, I will say, okay, well, you know what? My intuition may have said that wasn't good for that reason. However, my soul said, I'd like to go on another journey, so let's take it on. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
I always think, you know, I always think that there's always other places or reasons or events or whatever, and then you just enjoy that ride. In other words, I like to think of it as not a highway that you're getting off the wrong exit and you end up in a desert or in a, you know, an ocean. I almost like to think of it as you're on a Gerber daisy and you're just jumping from pedal to pedal, you know. It's almost like a semblance, you know, of all of the things, right?
Yeah. I got engaged to a guy where my intuition told me no in like four languages. I speak four languages.
Right.
Like no, nine, or, you know, like I heard it very loudly and what came out of my mouth was yes. And I remember having a bit of an out-of-body experience going, wow, this is really interesting that I just said that because there was a real clarity there for me and it was accessible to me, you know, and then I went through my journey of a few weeks and eventually broke off the engagement. But I needed those few weeks in some ways to sort of learn something so profound about, you know, who was going to be the man I would spend my life with currently, ultimately. But I would be a very different person if I hadn't had gone through that. I wrote about it in one of my first books and I often thank him, you know, when people say, you know, thank your teachers, that man I got engaged to, who deeply loved me and cared about me, is certainly one of my teachers and one of the hardest things I went through.
But also, too, I think the choice, and your books are very good with that, it's about when you make a choice, it's about exploring that event for that moment. It's not about saying and constantly having that overriding hammer in your head that says, it's wrong kind of idea. You know what I mean? So I think sometimes if you you say, well, you know what, maybe I don't want to go to school today and I sit it out and I miss a great event at school. And I'll say, okay, well, what I learned is that, you know, I had a pleasurable day at home. I rested when I needed rest. It's okay that I missed that, whatever happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the idea of being okay, of being you, of being an individual, of being honest with yourself, of maybe just being a little bit just being aware of what it is for the moment and not worrying about all that other. You know, when you say about a teacher and the lessons that you learned, it drives me crazy. They always say there's lessons to learn. I get it, and I know that's essential for some, but I'm like, it's not a lesson, it's an experience, you know? I turn it around and I say, you know, well, isn't that a great experience? Because you can't, when you think of an experience, you cannot reflect while you're in it. You can only reflect when you're out of it. In other words, can I say that the sun is hot today? I could say it's hot for the second, but I have to look back on it. Did I sweat 5 minutes ago? Was it out 5 minutes ago? So you can't reflect on an experience when you're in it. You have to reflect when you're outside. So enjoy the ride, yes?
Yeah. And, you know, when you're saying that, what I'm reminded of is that I think, you know, as parents, we really do say and think, wow, that was the wrong fork in the road, or wow, I didn't do this, or wow, I didn't invest in the stock market, or I chose the wrong, you know, XYZ. And at an unconscious level, we project that onto our children that we need to make great decisions for them. You know, like so many kids have gone back to school. I've got a child who just started kindergarten, but the pressure that I hear parents put on themselves to put their kid in private school, age five, because that's going to be, you know, the determining factor of their whole life. Or they commute 45 minutes across town to go to an all-girls school because that's, you know, and it's this kind of, and of course they're trying to do the best from their child from their viewpoint. But I'm very much thinking, you know what, this is one year, we'll see how it goes, and if we need to change, we'll make a change. And this is not going to be a tattoo in some ways of a foreverness about what specifically happens on the child. And the other thing I wanted to respond, you know, is I find like the letting yourself off the hook, right, and letting your child kind of make the decision and making and giving yourself a break. You know, I find in the parenting circles we talk so much about kindness and raising kind kids and be kind to your grandmother and be kind to the postman, but there's not enough conversation about self-kindness. And, you know, turning the kindness inwards, and I can already sense and detect it even, you know, with five-year-olds around me, of just, well, what are they saying about themselves? What are they saying to themselves, right? And that in some ways informs much more how kind they're going to be to their friends, their peer group, their teachers, because when they're feeling loved and kind and safe and full, are a lot more likely to sort of, you know, be lovely, sweet, fantastic kids. I teach my child when someone's acting bad or saying bad things, it's because they're feeling bad on the inside about themselves. And, you know, there's not like a labeling, he's a bully, he's a mean child. There's an empathetic compassion of what's going on with that child that he's saying those things or that he's hitting or mean or whatever. As opposed to distancing the child from the one who's bad, there's an understanding of the child.
But there's also, too, the idea that as children grow, they learn more feelings, they learn more words, they learn more ways of expression in how to be in the world. So, in other words, you almost liken it back to the Gerber daisy again, you know, when it's just above the ground before it puts out that flower, it decides which way the sun is coming, it decides which corner it should go around, and it'll decide if it's got enough water to be able to go forth. And for every inch that it goes, for every time that it expands, it'll learn. Maybe I can go around that corner, and then if I get pushed back by the side of the building, I might have to go a little bit the different way. So really, children are almost like, I always would use the words on the radio a long time ago. I'd always say, I live in an amoeba life. I learn to be able to focus and go around and touch and feel and see and check everything out. And I kind of meander through it. And I really feel that all the time. And I think that's how children are very young. They live in an amoeba life. If it's hot, ooh, maybe I might pull back. If it, you know, feels good, I might go that way. If it doesn't, I might not, you know?
Yeah. And then we put, you know, sharp corners and rigidity and expectations on them. And, you know, I absolutely agree.
Again, Ariane, can you also share about your book? I think what is great that you have some stories in here that actually teach children how to breathe. They teach them how to meditate. They teach them how to focus. And I think that's so vitally important because sometimes people will say, I really don't understand that. Well, if you're sitting down and you had a stressful day, maybe you need to pick up the book about meditation and read it to your child, and then you both are engaged in the process. So that when you maybe are having a rough day or you've never experienced it, your child may be able to come up and say, hey, let's meditate. Let's try that thing. Let's try breathing. What's that all about? You know?
I mean, it's so funny because you're going to want to stay in your bad mood, like you've taken your elevator to the basement, and I promise you, your child will say, Mommy, maybe you should take a deep breath. Like I was in a store the other day just trying to buy a recycling bin, and it was stressful. They were way too many. They were too expensive. And this, my little four-year-old came up and said, Mommy, I think now's the time to take a deep breath. You know, and on one hand, you're like, oh, my God, I love this child. On the other hand, you're like, no, I'm really stressed. You know? But it's an amazing thing, you know. I mean, one of the things that came through for me when I was writing these books was, you know, I was sure I was going to be the most spiritual mom and conscious mom and, you know, give birth to a, like, Buddha baby. And it's funny, like, life gives you exactly what you need. And I found that I had to find the language
of like all the workshops, books, seminars, teachers I'd had to bring that language down for a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 year old. And that was what I wanted to give to parents, which is it's beautiful that you're on a conscious path. It's beautiful that you've been doing this. Now, how do you make all of this accessible to your child? And breathing was a big one for me. And so I had to come up with the language, which is, you know, you have superheroes inside your body, and they help you with everything, and they need oxygen, they need to breathe, and if they're not breathing, then they're going to die. And they need sleep, which is why we need to get to sleep, or they need water, otherwise they're going to work really slowly. Do you see, you do it in language that they understand, and I say, you know, when I can see him getting out of sorts, I say your brain's a bit fizzy, maybe it's not getting enough oxygen, or maybe your left and your right brain aren't friends right now, or they're not talking to each other, or... Do you see it? So it doesn't become this kind of serious, mm-hmm. Oh, my God, my child's going to meditate. It actually becomes quite playful for them. You know, I often get my child to lie down on his bed. He takes his favorite cuddly toy, let's say it's a Mr. Dinosaur, and he puts it on his stomach so that he can feel, like, the breath in his stomach. And I say, okay, deep breath. And the goal is to actually have the dinosaur fall to the left or the right. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he knows he's taking a deep breath. So, you know, they're playful. These are not serious books. They are themes that every adult, you know, can continue and develop by themselves. But from the child's perspective, they're highly illustrated. You know, you've got elephants that are farting, and you've got snakes on skateboards, and dolphins, you know, having ice creams. And they're in such a playful way that they enter the child's world of what those themes mean. You know, the breathing one takes place in a school environment where everything's going crazy and, you know, right. It's funny. And then you have, you know, dragons that are taking deep breaths and lions that are taking deep breaths. And so the hope was really to have the words be very deep and meaningful, but have the illustrations kind of take the child on a journey of their own.
You know, and also, too, I think the idea that as we help our children engage in the world around them and give them a little bit words of language, but also to really, really, really foster that side of feeling inside of them. I really see it almost as these children are going to not save the world, however, they will be there to comfort the world when it changes. I really look at it. Yesterday I had a guest on my show, and we were talking about the elders and how they're, you know, living pretty much in homes by themselves and don't see human beings, you know, maybe once a month, or aren't cared for, have no interaction. It's almost like there's a great deal of the elder population that's pretty much been, is hanging over the cliff. And I look at it and I say, wouldn't it be glorious if these children that are now being born, that are now maybe about in just being born up till maybe about 5 or 6, will somehow work out something coming up in the world where they will, if they're going walking to school and they pass by a house and they see 2 or 3 newspapers in the front yard and they walk up to the door and they say, and they look to see if maybe the person's okay in the house, you know, because they knew that all the papers every day would go out because they would go out and get them, but all of a sudden they weren't. Mm. So I find that as we teach our children about feeling, can we also share with them about having the caring compassion to look outward? In other words, really expand that to notice things around and say that person needs help and just do it without asking, or they do it without being tagged on social media or being, you know, held up in a viral, you know, a YouTube. Who cares? Just get up and do these things, and it will become more of a wave that will kind of incorporate comfort for these older generations, yes?
This was one of my goosebump moments with you on this conversation, because one of the things that I have been doing, you know, I live in New York City, and we live in a neighborhood where there certainly are quite a few old people, and one of the things I've been trying to teach my child, but I'm teaching myself, is to notice and to witness, and to not just go from school to swim class to Central Park or whatever it is, but to really notice and to notice people around. And I tell you, like, he will notice an older person with a walker, and his big thing is to say hi to them and to give them some eye contact. And I tell you, it just changes. It changes all three of us.
These people are blown away that a child has actually seen and noticed him. And I tell you, it is just, it fills up my heart. And he even says to me, he goes, Mommy, he goes, I think I filled up their bucket. Because we talk a lot about what fills people's buckets up versus what empties buckets. You know, whether it's the doorman, whether it's the, but it's sort of, it's eye contact and noticing and witnessing. And it is an easy little thing to teach, and the children want to be doing it. You know, they're already born to be doing it. You know, I asked them the other day, I said, why do you think you came back to planet Earth? And very simply, in the words of a four-year-old, he goes, I think I'm back here just to say hi to everyone and to smile to everyone. That was it.
That's right.
That's all he was here to be doing, say hi to everyone and to smile to everyone. And I was like, oh, that's just deep breath moment, you know.
Right, and exactly what he said. You know, people have asked me, and I'm in my 60s, they'd say, what are you supposed to be doing here? You know, and I've got, you know, what, 4 degrees, all of these other blah, 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 blah stuff, you know. And I turn it around and I say, you know, I was just here to stand and smile. There was nothing else.
Wow.
Nothing else. Zero. I can't give you an answer. I don't have one. That is my answer. That is who I am. And they say, well, what does that do for anyone? What is that supposed to change? How is that supposed to be profound? Do you collect a paycheck for that at the end of the week? And it's like, are you seriously kidding me? You know? And it's like, in my conceptual mind, I can't understand that. So really what your child is doing, which really what I've experienced in this world, is that we're really angels that are here to interact on the earth to allow other angels to be awakened. So, if I, you know, when you were saying just now about your son with the person with the walker, I had this perfect vision, is that I would walk up in front of the walker and I would say, hey, put my arms out and say, hey, I'm your guard, you know, and I would say, where do you want to go? And I would we would be walking and the person with the walker would be behind me and I'd put my arms out and I would be guarding it along the way. Do you know how hard it is to be an elder person with a walker and you have to ask people to move or people run into you or they hit your walker and they bump it? You know?
It's almost like
a protection angel.
And it's funny, I had to teach him that some of the people don't hear him because, of course, he says it once and gets no response, twice he gets no response. I've had to teach him that, you know, sometimes their ears don't work so well, so he has to get closer, he has to, like, touch their hands so that he is seen and visible. But, you know, to your point about, you know, what does that do for people, you look at all the Gallup polls of people who are, you know, in traditional jobs. You know, more than 2/3 of them are actively disengaged and actively not liking their jobs. And one of my perceptions, having been in the corporate world for 12 years and gotten out, is that people don't feel seen, don't feel visible, don't feel heard, don't feel appreciated, which is exactly the same thing as these old people, right? You can be 30 working your butt off. When you are not seen, noticed, appreciated verbally, visually in any way, you start going a little numb and you start being resentful, you start being angry with life, yourself, the world, your choices, whatever it is. And it's so, to me, that the being deeply seen, you know, the people that I've coached who are depressed or really are going through big, big life transitions, they need a safe space to let it all out, just to say, I hate this, or I'm upset about, like, they just, you know, it's just everything is allowed to be said and spoken, including the rage, including the depression. You know, that's to me what needs to be allowed at any age. You know, for me, I was like, I've written books for grown-ups and I coach them too. But to me, it was like the earlier we set that in some ways, you know, that was my hope with doing a children's book series now.
You know, it was interesting. I had spoken to someone the other day, and I was telling them about how I felt about the storm, because pretty much I can feel how the earth moves. I can feel the energy changing. I could feel the energy of the people around it. And now that there's hurricanes a lot around and a lot of earthquakes around, I really tie into that, and I can really sense it. And I was sharing it with someone, and they were like, that doesn't resonate with me. I don't know about that. You know, I don't want to hear about that. That doesn't resonate. You don't need to bring that into my consciousness. And I'm going, oh, gosh, are you a spiritual angel with blockers? You know, you know, because I think we're finding a lot of people are saying that they're ascended, they have awareness, they have spirituality, they're great. And that really puts them separate from people. So really, if you could say, if your child is feeling that someone is sad and they sit down and they cry with them, how glorious is that? Mm-hmm. If they could say, if someone is really depressed, can they lay down with them and just hold their hand? How wonderful is that?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That is more love than saying, I'm spiritual, I'm shining my white light. Get over yourself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And to me, you know, the general theme that you're pointing to is one of safety, which is most people do not feel this world is a safe place. For mm-hmm. however long it's been, whether it's nature's now not safe, it's making me feel out of control, you know, men are not safe, and this whole, the movement,
right.
Are my kids safe? It's gone. So there's this whole issue around safety, which underneath is all about not being in control. And I specifically wrote a poem called You Are Safe, where safety is not an external control mechanism. Safety is more of an internal thing. And I think the sooner kids get that, you know, their safety definition is different, especially from the one that is being projected from news, media, everything else that's going to, you know, hit them at some stage in their life, the more they are going to, they're going to move beyond that level of, you know, out of controlness, because they don't know what's going to happen today. You know, as adults, we need to know. We need to be in control. We, you know, for adults, the screws are on the outside. You know, if I control this and I change this and I do this, then my life and world's going to be safe. And yet, the more the inner world can inform that, the more you can be an amoeba, right?
Right.
You can go with what is going to show up, because there's a safety inside of you, more so than, you know, oh, what's going to happen next when I wake up.
But also, too, I think the idea that there's those people and there's my people and there's that energy and it's my energy, or it's good or it's dark or it's light or whatever. And I think that, you know, when I feel the earth energy, I don't feel it as fear. I feel it as a shift in energy. And does that arise different emotions? It sure does, and it should arise emotions, because emotions are what brings us to, you know, to feeling. But I think sometimes when we see these little children, they're like, oh, a storm's coming. Okay, it's going to rain a lot. Oh, okay, storm equals rain. Okay, we're going to get too much rain. Okay, well, let's build an ark. Let's go move away. Let's go take another vacation. You know, and the ease of these things. I think sometimes we get so wrapped up in, you know, my stuff and all this other. If you ask kids, go put all your precious things inside of a suitcase, they're going to come out with just their stuffed animal in the blanket. You know, they're not going to come out with everything
that's
in their bedroom, you know.
It'll be one thing. No, and I know, you know, we were talking about storms earlier, and it's sort of when it appears like, you know, planet Earth can kind of do these horrible things through storms, earthquakes, volcanoes, you're building this unsafetiness, right, in your child. When you're explaining to them that planet Earth is, you know, a living being and out of balance, and humans are not being very kind to planet Earth, like there's an understanding as to why planet Earth is trying to get itself back in balance. As opposed to, you know, again, not witnessing and noticing that we are living on this planet. It's, you know, and again, it's not something that a lot of children have an awareness of, you know, or an appreciation of. So, again, there's a life skill poem on, you know, planet Earth and, like, understanding, you know, well, how am I in relationship to this planet? I mean, we pray for planet Earth every day here, because it is our life sustainer.
But I also think about the millennials, too, how they have very little stuff. They're very mobile. They're very shifting. They're able to adapt. They could have one job this week, another one next week, another place they could live tomorrow. It doesn't really matter to them. So I think that's actually the way humans may be evolving, and isn't that glorious? Because we will learn that it's not all about all this collection of stuff that creates our identity. Our identity is our soul and our spirit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what your books, again, Being You, You Are Loved, and Giggles and Joy, really teaches us. You know, the spiritual life lessons you talk about for kids is really about engaging in the moment, being present, and just, my gosh, you know, if that's all there is today, there's today. And then tomorrow, we'll worry about tomorrow, yes?
Yes. Beautifully said.
Well, Ariane, thank you so much for joining us today. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you and about your books? That would be wonderful.
Sure. So the books are, there's three books currently. We're going to come out with more. They are available as a trilogy, so all three books as a gift set on Amazon. More information about the books, you can go to gigglesandjoy.com. We've got some lovely people who've endorsed them, Oprah's parenting coach, Goldie Hawn. We've got some people, you know, the author of The Spiritual Child, who did the longest study in the world on watching the impact of spirituality on children for 25 years, which is beautiful. So gigglesandjoy.com. And then my own work and journey, and if you want to get in touch with me, I'm at arianestudio.com. That's arianestudio.com. And I am going to be doing a little online course for parents, caregivers, grandparents to just take them on that journey of, well, how do I teach my child intuition? How do I teach my child self-kindness? How do I teach my child, you know, witnessing, noticing skills? So that'll be out in the fall as well.
Well, it was such a pleasure to have you with us here today. I think that the conversations and how we can shift our language, you know, I said it on the radio, I think it was about 10 years ago. I said, we're really going to be coming up with a new language, and we're just learning the letters. And then I said, you know, a few years ago, we're starting to form sentences. I think now we're into the paragraph time where our children are learning how can we put these words together. And everybody's experiences are really shifting, no matter what gender, decade, no matter what decade in life we are in, we're really shifting now. We're finding that, you know, we don't have to think the old way. Let's just be a little child and enjoy our days, yes?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, the way these books even came through me was very much sort of the languaging of the children that I was seeing and noticing,
right,
and sort of having that be what led me through it. Not in a million years
yeah.
I ever think I'd be, you know, doing a children's book series or talking to you on the radio.
Really, absolutely. I know, because I don't even think, I think for every year that passes, we just evolve so quickly, and isn't it wonderful, yes?
Yes. Yes, yes. Thank you, Dr. Jeanette, for who you are and the work that you do.
Thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Ariane de Beauvoisin, her link is on the bottom of today's show page, and please click on it and go directly there and find out more information about her books, also her work. It's really about being able to say, you know what, I am really tired of carrying this weight. If you're an elder, and say, I love to go play with children. Go play with children and lighten your load. If you're a parent, say, you know what, I'm just going to engage with my child and grow with them. Isn't that a wonderful way to be? And for all the children to say, you know what, I'm just going to shine my light. Wow, isn't it a great day? Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Until tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.